This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from Podbay 2A, a mile above sea level at Intergalactic Prairie Studios. We alter your look at the Ceruleus by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. This warms your brain to a tasty and toasty 365 degrees Fahrenheit to keep a sin flood of statism out of your head. Can you feel it? Is it working, guys? Can you feel it?
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. Hey, Lou.
So this is Michael Dean, the Iron Hamster. Let's go around the room and give our wrestling names. We haven't done that in a while.
Hey, this is Lou Sander Fien, and I am the Chop Chop Rooster, the Leashless Labrador, and Titanium Meerkat.
I'll add Leashless Labrador. You're the only one that I know of with more than one, but now you have three. That's pretty cool.
Now he has three.
So I want a new one.
James Babb. Well, you can apply.
The rowdy mud skipper, which, I still like, but, you know, it's kind of old now. It's time for something fresh.
The Leashless Labrador. All right. And Randy England, what are you?
I'm Randy England, and I'm the Wampus Cat.
Yeah, it's one of the best ones.
Which is also old, but I'm not changing.
Yeah. Well, no, it's a classic.
And you're the only one with your own sound effect.
Yeah, it's true. There's an app for that, man.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, the Wampus Let's Cat call needs to be a ringtone, kind of like the...
Damn, they're bigger buttons!
Yeah. Well, it is somebody's ringtone already, but, I was thinking the other day, I was listening to James Babb on the Freedom Fiends the other night on a show I was not on, or a section I was not on, and I realized something of why I call myself the Iron Hamster. Like, that was the first wrestling name on here. And the minute I came up with it, it just sounded perfect. And I didn't realize until 2 years later, until this week, why it sounds perfect. Because it brings up the idea of the Iron Chancellor, which is the nickname of Otto von Bismarck, who, the National Socialist who invented... it's not even National Socialist. It was... But he's the German who invented Social Security in America, right? James Babb.
Yes. Yeah. So you're not. It's not an homage to the Iron Sheik.
Well, I thought it was because that's who I remember from my youth, and Nima Vedati really liked that because and Nima was the only Fiends co-host with me at the time when I came up with that, and he really liked the Iron Sheik because when he was a kid, Nima's dad is from Iran, and the Iron Sheik is like back then was the only guy from Iran that was on TV. And, that was the best he could do for a role model. That and, like, people who kidnap Olympians and kill them. So,
see, and I thought it was a tribute to Margaret Thatcher, the Iron Lady.
The Iron Bee? Oh, I can't say it on radio. Yeah.
The Iron Lady. I believe the ones that kidnapped the Olympians were Palestinians.
Didn't Bismarck invent goose stepping or something like that?
Maybe.
Or was he
the Second Reich?
Are lining children up in rows?
Was that the First Reich school? Or the Second Reich?
Second, I think. No, I can't say now.
I'm not really sure. Interesting thing about Socialist Security, the government pension fund, and particularly in America, but I also think in Germany at the time, or Weimar, the whole point of it was... You turn like 62, and that was actually the life expectancy of women, and men were around 60. So you were,
if you're you make expected it, to they pay you.
Yeah, and you're expected to pay into this, and you're expected to die like right about the time you're eligible. Matter of fact, my mother had collected maybe one or two checks by the time she passed away.
Well, the reward's in heaven, right?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, but the payment was here.
Well, he was Prussian, which is, pre-German. Isn't he also responsible? You said the model of schools, the Prussian model of schools, they call it, of, showing up at the same place at the same time, sitting in tiny rows, and, memorizing useless things and being
compliant. I don't want to generalize about any group, but damn those Prussians.
Yeah. You're such a punk, James Babb. You are, more than anyone I know, like the most normal looking guy who's the most radical guy. I guess that's comedy on the radio.
Visual humor on the radio. it's really deceptive. It's hard to be around Jim in person because he looks normal, and you might like kind of walk up close to him and
he looks
think
like
that
he's
it's not
turn
bad,
you in, man. He looks like he's going to turn you in.
He does, but then he says something, and you have to move away.
It's the way he dresses and his taste in music, according to Steve Miller.
What did Steve say about my taste in music?
He was defending my band when you were smashing.
Oh, okay, said, that's right. I'm just too old and square for it. That's
it kind of got talked over, but he said James Babb is very Republican in his way of dress and his taste in music.
Ouch. Do Republicans like music? What is it, like John Philip Sousa? What are they?
I heard some. No, they like rock and roll, man. I heard some comedian talking about like, what happened? When did the conservatives steal all the good rock and roll? You know, it's like you turn on Fox News and it's like Ted Nugent going, cat scratch fever, and then you turn on NPR and it's like, hello, today we will be listening to a recording of scream singing, a Peruvian method of talking and singing at the same time from the 9th century that has been dead since the 9th century, but fortunately it's been revived by two Berkeley grad students. Here we go.
And don't forget the harp music in the background.
Now there's all kinds of rock and roll on conservative talk music. It's all like, you know, stuff that was dangerous 40 years ago, but
Now so Randy's rather conservative looking also. And you look at him and you're like, oh,
you think like nice he might have been might be some kind of lawyer or something.
Yeah.
Maybe he worked. He looks like he might even work for the government at some point in his life.
A criminal attorney.
This is really low.
So we have a new. We forged an idea right before the show. Somebody's echoing. Somebody's got to turn on their headphones. We have an idea for a new section on the Fiends that I don't know if we're going to roll out yet quite tonight. And I don't really know what the legal or copyright ramifications of it would be, but we were doing this spontaneously, kind of this Mystery Science Theater 3000, which is a show, if you've never seen it, where like guys sit on a couch and make fun of and comment on sci-fi movies. We were listening to the news feed, which is the 6 minutes at the top of every hour on talk radio between, you know, minute zero and minute six before the
show.
Now,
this is very high quality news. Don't get us wrong. Just because we're making fun of it doesn't mean it's
the news,
exceptionally high quality.
It's the news that's free, I think.
I thought it was The Onion.
No, it's not. That's the thing, is you can't tell the real news from the fake news these days. But, you know, they were having news pieces, and we were all just kind of groaning and commenting and like laughing in unison, like we all thinking as one because we're all brainwashed libertarians. But it was like there were two of them. What did Rand Paul say? And what was is somebody saying we needed to take back the country? And we're like, this passes for news? Come on, man. They're not going to take back the country. Those are the people that took the country. Like, just we're just making fun of it. And then they said something about Rand Paul. Well, what did he say? And we were laughing at it.
Oh, Rand Paul's going to
filibuster.
Yeah, he's going to filibuster the
tomorrow.
The increase of the debt ceiling. And the thing is, if this filibuster goes as well as his previous filibusters, absolutely nothing is going to happen. Nothing. Not a darn thing. Yeah, he filibustered and they didn't renew the Patriot Act, but the USA Freedom Act came like a day or two later.
Yeah. So there was a day of freedom, but nobody who's in charge of taking away freedom got the memo, so they didn't know. They kept encroaching.
So for the Rand,
I like
for
it the, when Rand does hang, filibusters. Hang, I think that's all he should do.
Don't filibuster. Go ahead, Lou.
For the Rand standards out there, you could say, yeah, it's really nice that he's doing it, but quit confusing it with him actually accomplishing something. All right, he goes up there, he rambles, he yaps for like 12 hours or something like that, and then absolutely nothing changes. It's not an accomplishment.
Yeah. No, it is an accomplishment. I take maybe a slight nuanced view. While he's talking, they're not voting on anything, right? Doesn't that count?
It's kind of like having something clogging up the colon of Congress.
It is exactly like that.
Flow. The spikes can't flow.
Right, but you know, that's the thing. It clogs up, but then it just builds pressure behind it, and eventually it explodes.
It might
Congress
come up the works.
A series of tubes, man.
Yeah, it might come up the works, but then they just go in and spray some Status WD-40 in there, and the gears start turning again.
Right.
So still well, not Michael, an accomplishment.
If anyone wants to use that phrase of clogging up the congressional colon, line is now covered by the BIPCOT government license.
Yeah,
wait, so Rand Paul can't use it.
Right. They have status WD-40, but then it's also known as state lax, which is a little pill that unclogs the colon of Congress.
state lax.
Better lay down some plastic for that one.
Diapers, man. Well, you know, Ronald Reagan was one of the worst statists ever, but he really could talk a talk, and he said a lot of things that made him sound like a straight-up anarchist, although some of them were written by his straight-up anarchist speechwriter. What was that guy's name? Carl
Hess.
Yeah.
Not Ronald Reagan.
Barry Goldwater. Right. But then it filtered, it trickled down. It was trickle-down propaganda, because Reagan tried to copy... He tried to copy and outdo Goldwater and got elected. They say that Goldwater got elected. It just took 13 years in the former Reagan. But one of the things he said was, government is like the alimentary canal of a toddler, which is, you know, from the mouth to the anus. I had to look that up. So Reagan actually said government is like the alimentary canal of a toddler, like an unrestrained appetite at one end and no restraint at the other end.
No responsibility, yeah.
Yeah, no responsibility at the other end. There you go.
Well, if he'd have followed through on like at least half of his stuff, he wouldn't have been such a filthy statist.
Any of it. He
also said the most dangerous 8 words in the English language are "we're from the government and we're here to help you."
Now, going back to the useless phrases, my landlord is running for city council, and he's a longtime incumbent. And his campaign sign says, "Take back your city."
And he owns half the town, so he's he's already taken the city, and he wants you to give him more power by thinking you're going to get some of the city back.
Is that an invitation to burglars or something? You said he owns half of it.
Yeah, but with the power of voting, you can give him another term, and then you can like take back the government by having the same people in there.
Yeah, my favorite campaign promise or slogan of someone we actually knew like that was a good guy. It was Derek Slope ran for I think town council in his town in Maine, and his sign said, "Still voting? Vote for Derek Slope."
You're listening to the Freedom Fiend. If you're still voting. These
words. Did you guys know that? Have you seen those signs?
No, I didn't. That's good.
In Survivor Max 2, School Bites, Maximus scavenged through a wasteland swarming with the undead. Desperate to find the medicine he needs, he discovers a community of survivors at his former school. Has he finally found the safe haven he's been looking for, or will he discover that school bites? Look for Survivor Max on Facebook, read reviews on Amazon, and read Chapter 1 at SurvivorMax.com.
I want that powdered wine.
That dehydrated wine.
Freedom Fiends. Powdered wine, box wine, and other good stuff. Before we go into James's recent exploits, his dissident activity, I want to do a little selfless shame promotion. And this past week, I was on the Seeds of Liberty podcast. I'll have Michael post a link to that. It was pretty good. I was half asleep from doing a show the night before, and went out there, dropped some mad scientists, and a lot of funny stuff in there. So, nice. Good entertainment, educational, edutainment. That's what it was. So, Jim, you've been a busy little beaver. What have you been?
A bad boy.
What
have you been up to lately?
Well, I was contacted by the government, which is never a good sign, right? I went to New Jersey. Okay, now that's not the punchline. Okay, that's
but you just like went full Jersey. Never go full Jersey.
Not only did I go to New Jersey, I went to Ocean County, New Jersey, which is like the New Jersey of New Jersey. Okay.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's like the as Jersey as you can get. It's far deep into enemy territory, across the whole state, practically at the ocean. So I go there to pass out some pamphlets. Okay, now that's how crazy, you know, radical, you know, hardcore I am. I'll stand on a corner and pass out a pamphlet.
Here, well, have this piece of paper.
Right. That's well, evidently this is quite a threat, because what is on that piece of paper says stuff like, you can, hey, if you're a juror, you can vote your conscience. And if you think the law is bogus, just say not guilty. And this is this message is not really something that prosecutors like. And usually they just have to kind of grumble and be like, well, okay, I guess you could be here. Just don't block the way, you know, and they have to reluctantly allow you to be there. These guys just said, hey, you know, they decided they're going to just go full Jersey and like, nope.
Never full Jersey.
First they said, you can't be here. And I'm like, well, why, you know, yes, I can. And why not? And they're like, well, you know, there's no soliciting. I'm like, okay, no problem. Not soliciting. Well, you can't be here. Well, why not? Well, because I said you can't be here. Well, under what authority? Well, because it's me. I'm telling you, you can't be here. I'm like, is there a law or a statute? Or, well, I don't know what the laws and statutes are. You move along, you know, like, well, why don't we look it up and we'll, you know, we can review it. So they're like, I'm not going to play. Finally, they're like, all right, well, meet me out here in the courtyard and we'll go find it. So anyway, I meet them down in the courtyard and they're like, you're under investigation for jury tampering. You will present your ID. So like, okay, great. So yeah, I pass out some pamphlets and they're investigating. So yeah.
Were you being detained?
Yes. Yes, I was being detained.
Are they still investigating? Are you waiting to hear?
Well, I don't know. How would I know, right? Like
they may be waiting for you to come back and then they'll scoop you up. Now
they could.
When they went to get you, and I saw your thing on your video that you did of this, they went and conferred with the two worst people on earth in terms of people who would be happy that you were there. Okay, right. First, the prosecutor whose case you're screwing, and the judge whose instructions you are pleading with people to disobey, right?
Yeah, basically, yeah.
Yeah, and that's how the prosecutor would see it, and that's how the judge would see it. I mean, you got the two guys that the cops are going to go to, the marshals, the bailiffs, whatever they call them in New Jersey, they go to see the prosecutor or the judge, or both. Apparently both in your case, was that right?
You know, I'm not really sure what role the judge had. It was certainly like the number one and number two prosecutors were consulted that he mentioned specifically. He even like pulled out the statute number on jury tampering, which of course is completely bogus, because jury tampering means you have to try to influence a particular juror on a particular case to vote in a particular outcome. Okay. So it's like saying, hey, you, Bill Smith, I see you're a juror on this case. You should go say not, you should vote not guilty, okay? But if you're just passing out information to strangers on the sidewalk that say, these are your rights and you can choose to vote however you want, right? There is no particular juror. There's no particular verdict being asked for. So they know that it's not going to hold up, so
you should be able to get away with that there.
Shoulda, coulda, but this is like I said, it's the Jersey of Jersey.
It's not going to do any good if you get arrested,
right? And they can drag it out. They can, like what they did to Professor Julian Hoekland.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Antiwar, pro-free market. That's antiwar.com.
And, Jim, I'm wondering if you're going to, like, call the police department or the courthouse, like, every day for the next month or two and find out the status of the investigation. And one other thing, if passing out information that says know your rights is jury tampering, if you let somebody know that the Fifth Amendment says that they have the right to remain silent, is that witness tampering? You guys talk for a little bit. I'm going to make some memes here.
All right, make some dank memes. Do it.
That would be defendant tampering.
You know, the whole system is such a joke. It's just hilarious. Well, and I should add that when this lieutenant, he called himself, as I called him, Mr. Green, he not only did he declare that I was banned from the courthouse, I said, well, where would you permit me to? He goes, oh, way down there on beyond the school. Basically, he just looks out and commands, like makes rules for as far as his eye can see. Okay, like that's the kind of power these guys think they have. They're like, I'll decide what rights people have and where.
Well, he was improvising.
Yeah. Well, I even asked him, like, are you just making this up as you go along?
Well, he was. Like, you said, yeah. Where do I have to stand? And he had to look around and find some place. His problem was that he'd already talked to the judge and the prosecutor, right?
At least the prosecutor, yeah.
Okay, and at this point, yeah, at least the prosecutor, and he had to figure out some distance away that wouldn't make that prosecutor mad.
Right, they say, get rid of him, Green. We told you to get rid of him. He's still there. What's wrong with you, Green?
And probably there is some parking area that the jurors typically park in, and they definitely don't want you anywhere between the parking lot and the entrance of the courthouse.
Which is exactly where I was.
Well, that's where you wanted to be. It wasn't where I wanted you to be.
Yeah, at first he's like, you can go down there on the sidewalk. You know, I'm like, no, I guess I could, but I like it here better. You know,
that is what you said, I recall.
These guys are such losers. I mean,
you mentioned, I think when right after we went to the break, we kind of ran off into the break, and our listeners went off to the market. But that the statute there that you believed it had language that required that your influencing the jurors had to be with reference to a specific case or something.
That's my understanding. There? I was going to try to, you know, I don't really. Let's face it, these laws are whatever they say they are, whatever they want them to be. So,
you can't influence the jurors in the case. That's the prosecutor's job.
Exactly.
And the judge.
I have heard.
Only in the courtroom.
I have heard judges say to jurors, now, don't you go home and look up the law. I tell you what the law is, okay? They are deathly afraid of independent thought in the jury. That's their weak link in their whole little system.
Oh, absolutely. You have to. They cannot look up the law. They're warned. Don't you go and Google this on Google Maps. Don't you drive by the scene of this incident on your way home today. You don't do anything. It's kind of funny because in the old days, very very old days, the common law. With the juries that were first created, they brought in every people in the community that actually knew almost everything that was going on in the case. And there wasn't a whole lot to do, you know, to bring them up to speed. But now it's very important that no one know anything about the case.
Right.
If they're on the jury, you have to, you get thrown off the case.
Not only know anything about the case, but don't know anything about the law, don't know anything about the justice system, don't know anything about what the sentence might be, don't know anything about anything. Nothing. It's like, instead of being this quest for the truth, like they sell it on TV, it is the whole charade is just there to hide the truth by whatever means is necessary. And if that means you have to chase off the guy with pamphlets too, so what?
But the whole system is very hermetically sealed tried to be controlled, 100%, everything perfect. You know, nothing can be said wrong. I mean, when you see when a criminal case is over with, I mean, the defendant is in there asking for a motion for a new trial, and he's crying because the prosecutor, or you know, made some inference that he thought was incorrect and violated this super super tight control that every criminal case is done under. And you know, I understand, you know, I mean, a lot of it, and some things have to do with the rules of evidence, and you could have some problems if people got some information that was bad and maybe totally false even. You know, I guess I understand some of it, but the problem with jury nullification, and of course that's what we're talking about, and I don't know, we didn't even, we maybe it was sort of rude that we started out not saying exactly what was going on, but basically, Jim, you are inviting these people through the pamphlets, you are inviting anyone who was coming into the courthouse, not necessarily jurors, but we hope they pick up a few of them, that they are allowed, despite contrary instructions by the judge at the end of the case or throughout the case, you're inviting them to judge the law and the facts. Normally, a jury just decides what happened, and they say, if this, this, and this happened, you must find them guilty. And you're inviting them to say, hey, if this law stinks, I'll acquit them anyway, and I'll just find them not guilty, even if they did it, if I don't like the law. And that's what jury nullification is all about, yeah. Right?
That's exactly it. I mean, it's been like 800 years of that. You know, it's perfectly legal. It's got a long history in this country and long before that in the English legal system traditions. So it's nothing. It's really nothing controversial. It's just so annoying to them because there's this little tiny crack in their armor because they have to have a jury to have an air of legitimacy. They still use juries just so people think, well, it's fair. You get a jury, your peers. Yeah, it's a fair system. You know, you get your day in court. It's fair. You know, I saw it on TV. It's like Matlock, you know,
Go ahead, Jim. Well, I was just going to say the reason that jury nullification works, and I should mention it only is used in criminal cases. Can't do it in civil cases. I mean, you could encourage a juror to violate the law in the criminal case, and violate the law, I mean, not follow the law. Actually, you're not violating the law by not following it in this context. But it only works in a criminal case. In a civil case, if the jury doesn't follow the law, then the person who, say, lost that civil case, maybe it's a tort case or something, the person who lost it because the jury didn't follow the law, that case is going to get overturned on appeal, and it isn't going to make any difference. So you can't really have a lasting effect for jury nullification in a civil case. Only works in a criminal case, simply because when a jury comes back and says not guilty, even though the person is clearly guilty of doing the things they were accused of doing, double jeopardy kicks in. You can't try somebody twice. And double jeopardy kicks in, so the state, in a criminal case, can almost never appeal. They can't appeal a loss. They can't take it up to the Supreme Court and say, hey, there was jury nullification here. They didn't follow the law. Let's do it again.
What they can do, though, is a lot of times when the you know, if you have like one juror decide, you know what, I'm going to just be the one guy that says not guilty, or it could be 11 out of 12. But as long as it's not unanimous, they can say, well, it's a hung jury, and the prosecutors can decide to retry that.
Absolutely, yes.
So if it's not unanimous, like one juror can just go in there and just clog up the whole works, just destroy the prosecution's efforts for about a week. And then if they're serious, they'll try to do it again. And my friend Ed Fortune, that's what they did to him. Had a serious weed distribution charge that he was facing. And they said he had a pound of weed in his trunk. And he went in there and he said, yeah, yep, I had a pound of weed. I'm NJ Weed Man. You know, were you expecting a joint? You know, that's my personal stash. He at one point he even said, "Yeah, in fact, I'm eating pot cookies right now during this trial." You know, like just owned it, just didn't apologize, just owned it, and said, "But you know what? I'm not wrong. The law is wrong."
Is this the same fella who got a mistrial on the first case and it split like 6-6 or something, and then the prosecutor decided to try him again? And I'll tell you, that prosecutor had to have monstrous rocks in his head to retry a case that was 6-6. I mean, I can understand why they would retry one that was 11-1. You figured, okay, I got one guy that was off the wall. But 6-6?
Right. Yeah, I don't know what you the split was the case. First time, but it was a hung jury the first time. They couldn't agree.
I think it was 6-6 if I remember the case. But then he came back and he was tried again, and then he got all 12 on his side, didn't he?
Yeah. Because, you know what, because he didn't pander. He didn't go in there and play the stupid games. Like, he said, you know what, this is me. You know, I'm not apologizing. I'm not going to try to work some legal loophole here. I'm just saying, you know what, I did it. This is what I did. I think the law is wrong.
And now he didn't have a lawyer, did he?
A lawyer would never allow that.
I think he represented himself in the case. And yeah. I heard him talking about it one time. The one thing that I thought, though, when I saw him talking, is that this guy, I mean, he looked, you know, totally hippie and that. I mean, but he also seemed a really likable guy. He was articulate and the sort of person that even if the jury didn't have a good impression when they first saw him sitting there, by the time you got to the end of a whole trial, and see, that is the beauty of representing yourself. You can't just be some, you know, faceless defendant sitting there waiting for them to decide what they're going to do with you when that guy has been up talking to you for the whole trial. He's been there all day and all day yesterday or however long the thing happened. And if they like you and now they know you and know you as well as the prosecutor, that guy, he had it good. I'm sorry, but there's a lot of defendants that could not do that.
It's true.
But he did.
Freedom Fiends coming up right after this trip to the market. No magic word defenses.
I'm glad I wasn't the prosecutor that got slapped around by him.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Are you sick of peaceful people being locked away for victimless crimes? Instead of trying to get out of jury duty, consider taking it so you can do the right thing. A single juror with a conscience can send someone home to their family instead of to a jail cell. If there's no victim, how can there be a crime? And if the judge or prosecutor are keeping you in the dark, what are they trying to hide? You can vote your conscience instead of being a pawn of the state. For more information, Google jury nullification or check out the Fully Informed Jury Association at fija.org.
Back with the Freedom Fiends. We have a recovered statist on with us, Randy England.
Hello, Jim.
I think it's fair to disclose to our audience that you were once a prosecutor. Is that correct?
Yes, I was. I was a state prosecutor in the state of Missouri for 14 years. And I can tell you, before we went out, we were talking about this fellow named Ed Fortune, our N.J. Weedman, who had two drug trials in New Jersey. First one got a hung jury, and the jury basically was nullifying. And a hung jury, with it's a split decision, basically, they're allowed to try the case again. And the prosecutor in that case, it was apparently 6 votes for and 6 votes for acquittal, 6 for conviction. And the prosecutor in that case didn't apparently didn't make the judgment that he should just walk away from this one.
Well, he was probably told, right? I mean, did they get to really decide that, or are there political forces? Because Ed was very public about this whole thing. Like, when he was on trial, he was, like, on the radio every morning. He's in the newspapers every day. Like, really worked it and, like, really made a public scene out of the whole ordeal.
Well, that's so true, but however much pain it would have been if the prosecutor had said, that's it, we're going to dismiss the case. Now, what they would normally do is that they would come back and try to get the person, make a better offer, amend it to a lower charge, amend it to a misdemeanor, something. They'd do something.
Right.
But if they thought they were going to lose and they couldn't get the defendant to reel him in for a lesser charge, they should dismiss it. I mean, that's what I used to do. If I was just, you know, had been made myself into a half a monkey, I wasn't interested in making the other half look like an idiot, too. But it came out. Then he got in, got smeared 12-1. I mean, 12-0, and was completely acquitted. And the thing that's so horrible about this is that you don't know how upsetting it is to a prosecutor to have his head handed to him by a defendant who doesn't have a lawyer. Yeah. I mean, this is like a fifth grader having to go home and tell his daddy got whipped by a kindergartner. No, I'm serious.
The judge wasn't too happy either. I mean, the judge and prosecutor, you know, are, you know, work hand in hand, of course, in these situations. And I was doing the pamphleting during both of those trials as well, at Ed's trial, and the judge was quoted in the paper, like the paper, like, contacted the judge, like, well, what do you think about this? What is, you know, and the judge said, this is an effort to scuttle the judicial process. That's what they said. And I thought to myself,
scuttle the judicial process. This was a healthy development.
No, their judicial process needed some scuttling. That was a fact. It wasn't a justice process. It was a judicial process.
But, you know, even though these prosecutors were way too stupid to give up after the first one, trust me, they're going to think about it before the next one comes around. I mean, when cases finish and you get your behind kicked bad enough and you go back to the office and you talk, most of them actually will learn something from that.
Yeah, they're like, next time, don't let those guys stand outside and pamphlet.
Maybe so. But other times,
they knew me by name. Get this, okay? My first, I was out there a couple days doing this. They'd address me by name, okay? Like, they're like, walk right up to me. Like, are you James? You know, like, they knew who I was. They knew, you know, I'm not famous or anything, but they had, you know, they had done a little research to figure out what the situation was.
Well,
you're not famous. You're notorious.
That was very, very painful what you did to them. Hey, you know, it was kind of interesting. I think you said the statute in New Jersey required that. Now, he was not allowed. Oh, I think we're going to a break soon here, aren't we?
Dude, this is. Can we bring you back for the second hour, Randy? I know you're. You only offered 1 hour, but
well, stick hey, with I, us if you can. I'll come back for the next segment anyway. Right, how cool about that? Let's do it.
All right,
more forced overtime on the Freedom Fiends.
Oh. It would be wage slavery, but I'm not being paid anything.
I'm gonna double whatever slavery they're paying you.
Just slavery.
Simple. Wait.
Wake up and smell the freedom. One of the easiest things you can do to help Liberty is to torrent Freedom Fiends episodes to help keep them drone-proof. You can set up your home computer to download and share Freedom Fiends archives over BitTorrent. You can even set up scheduling so it only shares while you're asleep or at work. Put your unused computing power to work and help keep the Freedom Fiends around well into the future. Simply go to freedomfiends.com and click on the Torrent Club link and learn how to torrent and share Freedom Fiends archives. Ah!
is the Freedom Fiends, a symposium of unsupervised sounds that caress your Freedom Fiend bone. I'm Randy England, and co-hosts Jim Babb and Lusander Fiend are here with us, and Jim advises me that he has hacked into the CIA's subspace mind control to beam our pirate signal of protest directly to your frontal lobes. So lose the tinfoil hats and know that you are free. Hi, Jim. Hey, Lou.
Hey.
Are you there? I thought so.
I am here, and I have not been touched improperly yet.
Very good. And I should say, the Freedom Fiends is covered all over by a BIPCOT no government license, which allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. And before we went to the break in the last hour, I think we were talking about the successful and embarrassing victory by Ed Fortune, otherwise known as NJ Weedman, on a marijuana case in New Jersey, where he humiliated the prosecution not once but twice, and unrepresented by any attorney, which is just the nightmare for any prosecutor. Prosecutors don't like to lose at all, and to be whipped by the amateur is just about as embarrassing as it gets. That's why I don't think that they will quickly forget this case.
No.
And so that's good. You know, one thing I was thinking about during the break was you mentioned that the statute in New Jersey, and I think the federal statute has something similar on jury tampering, the law that makes it a crime to tamper with a jury. It's most of them seem to require some intention or attempt to influence a juror in a particular case, so that if you're just trying to influence people generally about the judicial system and how that should be handled, that that you're okay. And now this Mr. Fortune, I don't think his was so much about there was nothing in there about that. And fortunately, Jim, who was handing out jury nullification pamphlets, he didn't get arrested, but hopefully some of the jurors did see those pamphlets. But I was looking at our statute in my state of Missouri, which doesn't have one called jury tampering, but it has one called improper communications. And now it distresses me just a bit to see that it seems that perhaps we have already transgressed in the first hour of this show and violated the Missouri statute simply by advocating jury nullification, that the jurors, if you're on a jury, you should be allowed to go ahead and judge the facts and the law, and if you think that the law is bad, you acquit the defendant, and if that seems right to you. And the law in Missouri says that a person commits this offense if they communicate, and then it says directly or indirectly with any juror in a judicial proceeding, except as part of the proceeding. So that means the judge and the lawyers in the courtroom are allowed to talk to the jurors, but nobody else is allowed to try and influence them. And this is a crime. And I'm thinking, this has already happened. I'm sure that there's somebody somewhere has. We have radio stations that.
Yeah, I'm excited to think that
in the state of Missouri.
Yeah.
I think you're already, you know, they may be drawing up the complaint right now, Jim, for you.
Right,
or
against
me, or
both of us. Against both Maybe of us, so. and Lou as well, and in fact the board op at GCN, everybody has had a hand in this.
Okay, can we give his name out?
the people that make the tubes that this show travels through are complicit. They are all accessories.
That's right. Imagine, is there anybody that would not be an accomplice in this crime?
No, I suppose that they would have some way to get themselves out of it, at least when they became governmental parties. The one thing that I see, though, I don't know if we've had any cases. I don't remember any cases like this in the state of Missouri, but I'm thinking that Missouri, and any case that has a statute like this, I think this statute, I'm just off the top of my head, I think it would be unconstitutional under the First Amendment to the, you know, the U.S. Constitution, just simply because...
right, well, that means they can't do it, right? Right, Lou?
What it means is that they would arrest you and haul you in, and they would try you, and you would lose,
Fiend
and you
phone.
Would be sentenced.
Fiend phone.
And then when it was over, and having spent your life savings and everything, you would finally win in the end.
You know, for them to jam somebody up for that would be a violation of their Chapter 5, Article 67 rights under the North Korean Constitution that protects and guarantees the right of free speech, assembly, and demonstration.
And the Articles of Confederation, I think.
Yep. Now, here's a quick question for you, Randy. If you were still a prosecutor, and did you ever run into this as a prosecutor where somebody was attempting jury nullification outreach?
Yeah. No, and not outreach. I got nullified a couple times, but there wasn't anybody outside helping me.
Well, how would you have responded as a prosecutor? How would you have responded to somebody passing out this information?
I don't know. I guess I would probably have gone to see if there was a statute that would. You know, prevent it. But on the other hand, just looking at the statute, I would never file a charge. I would never have one, even when I was a prosecutor, wouldn't have filed a charge. I would have probably looked at the statute and said, hey, this doesn't cover it. They can do it. And that would have been the end of it. But I didn't care about that sort of thing. You know,
it's not like everybody in the courthouse isn't against the defendant already, considering that the judge, prosecutor, and cops all work for the same company, so to speak.
Yeah, they do. You know, but after a while, I mean, different prosecutors are different. But, you know, after a while, you stop. It's not very personal. You know, when you're a new prosecutor and everything, you get your first case and you win that jury trial. It's like, you know, Rocky, you know, running up and down on the steps of the courthouse. It's, you know, it's really great. And wow, it's so wonderful. Feels so good and everything. After you've done it, you know, a dozen
times. After you've crushed 100 souls, 1,000 souls.
It stops and wind up broken homeless.
It stops being a rush anymore.
The thrill is gone after you've sucked so much blood out of people. It's like, yeah, doesn't even give you an erection anymore to send someone to jail for life.
The thrill of the kill.
The last jury trial I did as a prosecutor, I sent a guy away for life. Now, it was for murder. And a particularly brutal one at that. But when it was done and I won the case, it was right before I left prosecution. I picked up all my stuff from the table and started to walk out. And I was thinking, you know, how I would normally, you know, at least at one point have been celebrating the thing. And I thought, this is just sad. You know, the girl is dead, the person who was murdered, and this guy is going to prison for the rest of his life. What possible thing do I have to be happy about? And, you know, that's how I ended it.
Winning.
Well, you're a good man. Randy. And that's why you just didn't belong in that job because.
I didn't. It was my last trial, and I ended up leaving a few months later. But I think that there's a lot of prosecutors that reach that point where. And that was a case where I haven't the slightest qualms about what I did. I did the right thing. You know, somebody has to do. Try cases like that, and if
just
I was
doing your job,
no, not at all doing my job. Damn it, I'm somebody has to, you know, prosecute a murderer. It's just as simple as that, and so I'm not ashamed of that at all. If I want to be ashamed of something, I'll be ashamed of the drug cases that I was involved in. I'm ashamed of those. I don't want to talk about them.
Would you like to confess your sins?
No, I'm Catholic. I have a priest I go to for that.
Right. He gets to pay a fee for that. He can just pay a fee and move on.
Yeah, pay your indulgence and you're good to go.
Yeah, no, that's not the way to do it. You go there, you confess your sins, and they give you a penance, and then you move on. It's great.
Nice. No, let's do it old school. Give the Freedom Fiends a few satoshis, and you're forgiven. As a matter of fact, you could probably get some family members out of purgatory or something.
That would be good.
Yeah. So I'm gonna put on my mini status dunce cap for just a minute, and the value of jury nullification, it is judging the law. It's accountability of our elected officials. So. what it really shows when somebody's able to say no is that is the people that are the rightful masters of government and not the other way around. Because if the government are the rightful masters, then the people are the slaves. Now, you can go with the checks and balances that the Foundling Fathers promised us when they came up with their magic parchment and all that other stuff. But ultimately, you're going to have to put your conscience on the line, and you can go with legality or you can go with morality. Over in the neighboring state of Wisconsin, I've never been on a jury there. Matter of fact, I spent very little time in Wisconsin. So anyway, but my understanding is the instructions that the judge gives to the jury is you're not allowed to vote your conscience. You're not allowed to interpret things. You're basically required to do what the judge tells you to do. So what's the point of even having a jury or even having a trial?
Well, creates a veneer of legitimacy.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, it makes people think that there's bounced checks and balances.
Exactly.
Well, the jury is still there, of course, even in without judging the law, they are there to judge the facts, and they do that. But
not really, you know.
No. Well,
they judge whatever facts are fed to them.
Well, if they judge the facts, then New Jersey weed man would be doing like 10 life sentences.
Well, there you had nullification because you had a sympathetic defendant. You had Jim outside handing out these subversive pamphlets.
But it was mostly just Ed being himself and being.
It was.
But what about when you have a domesticated house pet population? And I'm sorry, but Wisconsin is full of domesticated house pet progressives that believe that their whole purpose is to be obedient to government. So what happens if you have that situation and they actually pay attention to that judge that says, you know, you'll do what I tell you to do?
You know, most juries
don't,
are.
Don't look up the laws.
You know, I got nullified a couple of times when I was a prosecutor, and I know why I did. And I learned that I should never try cases like that again because our local population didn't like it, and we didn't file those anymore. I had a case, I watched a case last year that my brother was a juror on. I went to visit him out in Arizona, and he was stuck on a jury duty, so I watched it. And they acquitted
and we're out.
They did the same thing.
We're out.
Weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty Talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
Randy, go bye-bye.
He was right. It's illegal to talk about jury nullification in Missouri.
They took him away. No, after midnight. It's one of those blue, it's a blue law. After midnight, you can't discuss it on radio. Yes. So I got hoisted on my own fiend tard. I helped co-invent Fiend Phone, and I've always used it correctly, except tonight I forgot to it didn't unmute me when I came back on. I spent half of the last like 13-minute segment trying to get a word in edgewise, and then started like yelling at you guys because you were talking over me and ignoring me. And then after like 5 minutes of that, realized that I was muted, like you guys couldn't hear me at all. So
It was that virus that I loaded to your computer.
I need to go read the Fiend Phone tutorial I wrote because I forgot some of it. Yeah.
Hey, Michael, there's this website called Creamy Radio Audio, and they'll teach you how to use all your equipment.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that's part of the reason I write stuff down is because I'm starting to get the brain farts to where I used to write tech books on video production and audio production, and I have them now like holding up my monitor because that's how little I actually look at the books I wrote. But I will actually pull them out about once or twice a year and look up something in a book I wrote because I can't remember how to do something. So a lot of times during the people who listen to Freedom Fiends a lot probably have noticed over time that the picture that we use on the website for the archive for the show after it's over does not always correspond with anything in the show, and the same with the title of the show. But the worst is when they are really kind of contradictory. Now, James Babb sent me this picture today of like a bunch of people with Disney cartoon heads holding hands and smiling in front of a burning car in a field. And he said that this was the militia that was going to be doing havoc to police on Halloween, which is actually
it's the National Liberation Militia for their Halloween revolt. I just reached into the file and got a file photo of this this dangerous militia. So
and I decided that was going to be the picture for tonight. And then I decided that since we talked so much about jury nullification, I was going to call. I thought a good title for the show would be Nullify Me, Baby, All Night Long. But that title combined with that picture make jury nullification look like a very different thing than it is. But I'm going with it.
Well, yeah, the other picture I sent to you along with that was...
the Amish blimp.
Was that this militia took down that army spy blimp. You heard that story, right?
I think this
no, I
doesn't exist.
Well, this is like the army hangs this balloon, this like tethered balloon over like Washington D.C. that can spy on the whole like mid-Atlantic area.
Oh, you know, one of our co-hosts actually used to be able to see that from her house. Nikki Darling said she could see that from her house or some drone or something that was.
Well, I think she's a member of this militia. So maybe she was in on this, but somebody like snuck in and like untied it. And the thing started, it floated across Maryland and into Pennsylvania, taking out power lines, destroying stuff.
I'm thinking of the Pink Floyd record cover for Animals, the one that has the floating pig on it in front of the Battersea Power Station. You know the story of that when they were filmed, they actually like commissioned a giant parade float of a pig for that photo, because that's what you do when you're, you know, a band that has $100 million on your, you know, credit line on your credit card and can, it's all tax deductible. And England has 95% tax for people that make that much money. You just want to spend it for a cool record cover. So you spend, you know, $50,000 on a parade pig, and the pig got loose. I think they let it loose. I really do. I think they let it loose because it got a lot of publicity. But that pig floated a couple hundred miles and landed in some farmer's field after being shot down by a farmer, allegedly. Because when pigs fly, I shoot them with my rifle.
That's basically what happened here. The pigs got loose. In this case, the army balloon. And, you know, yeah, was it on purpose? Who knows? It did a lot of damage. Now... I'm the one that's attributing this to the National Halloween Liberation Militia. Okay, sounds like really dangerous anarchists, right? It's these national anarchists. They're the ones to watch
the
out
national
for.
National ones. Well, you know, in the Spanish, what was the revolution where Hemingway was over fighting with the Spanish anarchists or something? Was that the Spanish Revolution?
Spanish Revolution, yeah.
Spanish-American War, what was it? That was interesting.
No, the Spanish Revolution. Spanish-American War was 1898.
Because whichever, the one that Hemingway was over hanging out and drinking and screwing and tattooing, that one, the anarchists were actually on the same side as the government. Did you know that? It was the anarchists.
Well, they weren't anarchists, they were communists.
Sounds like ANCOMs. Yeah.
Yeah, same difference. More Freedom Fiends after this.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Hey, this is Squiscar Squiggles from Death Clocks. And you are listening to the Freedom Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess I says worms now. So there you go.
Tired of those old Freedom Fiends buttons? Well, the Freedom Fiends have new button designs.
As always, it's only $10 for 10 buttons, and you'll get these nifty designs. Buy sheep, for sheep, on sheep.
State speech is hate speech.
Two designs for Guns and Weed, the Road to Freedom.
Three designs for Fiend Phone.
Bipcot No Gov.
A Freedom Fiends Worms button.
And Ask Me About My Worms.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says Buttons.
And now they're bigger buttons.
They used to be 1 1/4 inch. Now they're 1 3/4 inch. Dan, they're bigger buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Freedom Fiends. Hey, this is Lou. I'm joined by Jim and Michael. And Jim wanted to revisit some old business. From last week.
Hashtag please donate.
Oh God.
Gotta get in here.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, you have to do it.
People have said I had to address this. So first of all, I have a new conspiracy theory. Government hating radio host gets life threatening illness the very month Obamacare becomes law. Radio host gets insurance through Obamacare and it makes his life better. I think the government did this to me. Well, maybe not. I don't know. But Obamacare has put my insurance company out of business. Have I talked about this on the air? I don't think I have. I talked about it on the interwebs.
Well, it's one of so many companies that have gone out of business, insurance providers. Or if you weren't one of the anointed ones, I guess that was kind of the purpose, right? To consolidate this into the cronies' hands.
The single payer. Yeah, and I think it's going to be like Blue Cross Blue Shield is just going to get more absorbed into government because that's the only one left in Wyoming.
Like would you call it single lobbyist health care?
There you go.
It just boils down to just one final lobbyist.
Yeah. So in short, government is doing to legal businesses what they promised to do to the mafia, organized crime, and the drug cartels.
Yeah. Stopping competition or preserving competition or picking competition.
Crushing them.
Yeah. Yeah. It's happening. It's true. So I got to address really briefly. I put a notice on the Fiends site yesterday that some people were shocked by. Basically, it said the Freedom Fiends needs money or it will be no more. And it's my short and impassioned plea for people to start actually donating to the Freedom Fiends. I lose money on this show, and I've lost money probably 3.5 out of the 4 years that we've been on. And basically, like, what it is I can't help but put the money back into activism. Like, you know, I end up with $100 left over, and I'm like, you know what? Somebody needs to have a little radio transmitter in some city where there isn't one right now. Or we get a new host, and he doesn't have a microphone. I buy him a microphone. Or, you know, we buy Fiends buttons and end up giving hundreds of them away at Porkfest or at the Michigan Liberty Festival. So, or we buy a Bipcot flag because really, you know, you don't really have a stake in something until you got a flag. So, I keep losing money at this thing and it keeps doing good work and it keeps being the teaching hospital. But I'm making like, I mean, there's one guy that sends me $100 every few months. And then there's, Robert's guy, Tim Fry, sends me $20 every month. And then there's like five other people that send me like $5 or $10 every month. And my expenses are over $200 a month. And I can't work anymore. Like literally because of this illness that I've got, I'm disabled. And, you know, I actually talked to my doctor about getting on disability because I can't work and it's headed toward where like we're going to not lose our house, but like, you know, be in dire straits that could lead to losing our house. And the doctor said, you know what? You are disabled. You technically are disabled. You can't work. You should be on disability, but they don't give disability for asthma. Like there are people, he has patients that are like, you know, 80, like walking with walkers because they can't walk because they're so asthmatic and they don't give them disability. So I am technically disabled, can't get disability for it, can't really work. And pretty much the only thing I can do is keep doing the Fiends because it has to get done. So, you know, if you want to throw a little money my way, It's not going to help. It's not going to hurt, and it will really help, and I'd appreciate it. And I'm not going to, like, harangue people about it, but I am going to put this notice up. I figured every time that there's not a live Fiend show, I have been putting up classic Fiends, but some people actually complained, like, why are you clogging my RSS feed with things I've already heard years ago? So I'm just going to put up this notice whenever we don't have a live show. And you have no idea the amount of work that goes into doing this show behind the scenes. I mean, the first I was on this show for a half hour tonight earlier than I wasn't on for a half hour. I was like doing, like trying to get stuff done to keep the show going, to keep the logistics of it going behind the scenes. And I do stuff like that all day, every day. It's like the thing in Spinal Tap, the manager saying, you know, Ian saying, there's no sex and drugs for Ian. You know what I do? I sleep 2 hours a night. And that's kind of like what I am on The Fiends. So I end up working a lot and losing money. So if you want to help keep the show going, donate some money and I will put it to good use and never to evil.
And I'd like to promise not to move to Cambodia, right?
Right, right, right. Okay.
I'd like to throw in that you can donate Bitcoin, and the QR code is on the Freedom Fiends website, freedomfiends.com. Yep. And Michael, I just sent you $20. So not only do I not get paid for my service, I actually paid to serve.
Yeah.
How Fiendish is that?
You know, I appreciate it. I've actually thought of like putting out an open ad, like want to be on, like really making it a teaching hospital that charges money, like, and has exams, like get a bunch of new hosts.
Tuition.
And, yeah. Do you accept insurance? Tuition.
Like a residency program.
Yeah.
Do you accept radio insurance?
I don't know what that is, but I'm intrigued with your ideas.
Well, you know, maybe I could help out. I've always wanted to sell out, okay? And I just really haven't had any buyers.
You won't have any here, man. I've tried.
What I'd like to do, if somebody out there, if there's somebody that, like, maybe if you want me to make fun of somebody, okay? A favorite politician, a government program, your stepsister.
It's the opposite of selling an ad. It's selling a diss. I like
it. I will make fun of anybody you want. And, you know, if I'd say, you know, that's worth perhaps even dozens of dollars.
I think it could be, I was going to say $5, but that's kind of too cheap. I think $10 plus.
Right. If it's somebody that I'd make fun of anyway, I'll do it for like $5. If it's like somebody I really like or like a friend, it's going to be like $10.
Yeah. So, James, do your kids go to public school?
What do you think?
I think you'd rather stick nails in your eyes, but I thought you told me your kids went to public school.
No,
or maybe I'm thinking
else. No, I would never send them to a government school. I would sooner just let them loose at the train station. I will not. I will not.
That's horrible, man.
No, we have nice train stations compared to the schools.
Well, because I remember when I was like 12, I used to go to the train station to buy weed, but I got ripped off the one time I tried it. And then I tried it that time and a few other times I tried to try it. Like 40-year-old men tried to have sex with me in the bathrooms. That's what train stations are.
All right. Well, okay. Maybe I won't drop them off at the train station, but there's still no way in hell they're going to government
school. At the bar.
All right.
You drop them off at a bar, they'd probably be, you know, safer.
Actually, the mall here would be great. There's an Apple store where they could do all their internet. There's a food court where they could eat. There's like a rock wall. They could do like climbing at the sporting goods store.
Isn't there a movie where some kids just live at the mall for a while? I know there's the museum ones, but I think there's a mall one too.
Didn't some guy live at an airport for like 5 years because he didn't have papers to stateless. Get out?
he was an anarchist. Yeah, there's a movie with Tom Hanks about it that's pretty funny that's loosely based on it. It's basically somebody was in transit at some New York City airport, I think it was. And
no, it was Paris.
Paris, and the country he was from dissolved while he was on the plane, so he was stateless.
Oh, you can only be so lucky, right?
That's one of those quality problems.
I think it is, man.
Wouldn't that be great? You fly to Amsterdam or something, and when you land, they'd be like, I'm sorry, the U.S. dissolved while you were over the Atlantic.
Or how about what if you're a soldier deployed overseas and the U.S. dissolves and like a new country pops up, unfortunately, and they're like, oh, no, you guys got to apply for citizenship. You know,
America changes its name to New Pepsi presents New Zanzibar. Classic Coke presents New Zanzibar. That's a Simpsons reference.
There you go.
Yeah.
So anyway, One other thing that I want to add, if you bought Bitcoin, like, I don't know, a few months ago, Bitcoin is up over three. Yeah, it's up over 300 per Bitcoin now.
Wow.
So it's the reason that I was able to drop 20, you know, in the drop of a hat or push of a button, rather, without even thinking about it, is because I bought some Bitcoin right before I went to AgoraFest, and I spent Bitcoin there, and I still have a bunch more money than, or a bunch more Bitcoin than I had prior to going to AgoraFest.
Cool, man.
Nice. So it's like I drew all kinds of interest.
Lou's a proud member in the new program that I just invented that he doesn't know about yet, called the Sisterhood of the Traveling Flag. So I had this really nice Bipcot flag made up. It's 3 feet by 5 feet, and Davy Barker has it this weekend, and he's taking it out for a walk. He's taking it to some zombie con. But I was thinking, like, any Fiends host that can display it somewhere in public that wants to, I'll just pay the postage and we'll just mail it around. What do you have, Jim? Maybe you can wear it like a purple cape while you're doing jury.
Well, it'll protect me, right? Like, yeah, they won't be able to carry me off. Yeah.
I mean, I said I would send you Bipcot buttons to clip on your Fiji pamphlets, but I love Fiji so much that I really don't want to, like, dilute it, and I think that would dilute it. But,
well, you know what I could do? Those pamphlets have, one of the ones, they have a little space on them that you add, like, this pamphlet is provided by so-and-so, and it has, like, a little, like, 2 square inches of space where you can put your own personal contact info.
Yeah.
I could print right in there, this is covered by the Bipcot license, like, right in the flyer.
So, well, we could make a stamp. Stamps are like $6.
Well, if I print them myself anyway, it's even easier. Oh, just to yourself. Add it.
Okay. Yeah.
Just to add it right in there and print it.
Nice. Nice.
I could even make it look like a stamp, which would be even cooler looking.
Make it look kind of broken and messed up. Yeah.
Yeah, people think that's more legitimate if it came off of, like, if it's poorly mimeographed or something.
You know, there's a typographical phrase, grunge fonts, which are fonts that, you know, look like broken type or text. You know, they look like they're printed with a offset printer with old typeface that's got cracks in it.
Oh, sure. Now, well, grunge. Now the equivalent is like using, like, Comic Sans font. Like, it's the same, like, old crappy look.
There's something I've seen that's really funny. It's a sign on an office door somewhere that says, and it's in Comic Sans, and it says, like, you know, please keep this door shut at all times. And then somebody put another sign under it in Times New Roman that says, please do not use Comic Sans. We are a Fortune 500 company, not a lemonade stand.
Oh!
And it's, you know, we like lemonade stands, though, so.
Yes.
Because they're unregulated.
Right, but they'd like to use Comic Sans because it's supposed to be a kid doing it, you know.
Yeah. Well, there's actually a TV ad that's got a little girl running a lemonade stand who, by the end of the commercial, is running a Fortune 500 lemonade concern.
It's because they didn't bust her early.
Yeah, it's because she was homeschooled. It's because she was schooled at the mall.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Are you sick of government lackeys who say, you didn't build that? Are you tired of elitists like Barack Obama and Al Gore taking credit for the web while trying to take over the web? Are you disgusted by experts whose concept of the internet is that it's a series of tubes? Take back the free market of computing by encouraging software developers to adopt the Bipcot NoGov license. The Bipcot NoGov license allows any use or modification except by governments. Go to Bipcot.org. That's Bravo, India, Papa, Charlie, Oscar, Tango.org.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of FreedomFiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the Fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
Freedom Beans. It's
final segment, Redemption, the third act. So you had some things that you wanted to cover, Jim. What were they?
Well, you know, it's Halloween coming up, and I just think it's really, I think the FBI is really going out of their way to make sure everybody feels scared. And did they scare you? Are you scared of this National Liberation Militia that's going to be doing the Halloween, what is it, the Halloween Revolt?
Oh, yeah, the Nationalist Anarchists?
The Nationalist Anarchists, right.
Yeah,
yeah, sounds legit, right?
Yeah, they scare me almost as much as the Christian Luciferians.
Yeah. Now, according to the FBI, this group has recommended that its members wear typical Halloween masks and use weapons such as bricks, bottles, and firearms. The NYPD Intelligence Bureau is monitoring the threat. Okay. Now,
well, that's an oxymoron. The yeah. NYPD Intelligence Bureau.
Yeah, exactly. I want to be the first one to make the connection between these guys and bringing that blimp down. Okay, why can't we? Let's throw them a bone, right? Like, look, let's take credit for it, right? That look what those anarchists did.
You know what they really need? They need a Facebook page.
Yeah. If they really wanted to catch on, you know.
Is there one?
There might be. I don't know. Probably search on Facebook for that and see.
What's it called?
National Liberation Militia.
Okay.
And I think it could be a lot of fun. You know what? If you don't have Halloween plans, you know, think about it. There's another great article about Halloween fear-mongering by Will Grigg. Did you read the article, The Real Reason Police Fear-Monger About Drug-Laced Candy?
Yeah, it's because they think that drug addicts are going to spend thousands of dollars on drugs and then give it away for free.
Yeah, basically. That sounds legit, right? But think about how scared it makes people. They're like, oh, look, and they show a picture. Look at these drugs, you know, and they're like, they look like, you know, they've got like superhero logos and they look like toys and they look like, you know, they look like candy, I guess. And so this is going to make somebody scared. Even.
Yeah. Well, the whole point of the police and all these different things is, if you go back to the terror warning alert system, you know, code orange, code yellow, code red, all this other nonsense, the whole purpose is to keep people in fear, because when people are afraid, they become desperate. They do really stupid, bad judgment type things, like put faith in government.
There you go.
What was it that I believe it was Mencken said this, I'm about to butcher it. The whole aim of practical politics is to keep the population in fear of all sorts of hobgoblins, either real or imagined.
Exactly.
Yeah, so here's one for you. In the Detroit area, if you have like a lion and tiger removal service or lion and tiger protection service, and they promise that they'll keep the lions and tigers away from you because, you know, there's lions and tigers, you know, just all over the place. Well, if you're scared enough of lions and tigers in the Detroit area, which they're not native to, you might sign up for that service. And so there's always going to be these constant reports of sightings of lions and tigers running around in neighborhoods. There will be grainy black and white photos with red arrows pointing at it.
And, or they might just say, well, we haven't actually seen lions and tigers, but look at this picture of this tabby cat. And since we know there's some cats, obviously we're doing a good job here protecting you from lions.
And this tabby cat disappeared. And then when somebody says, well, there's no lions and tigers running around, then that agency will say, well, look what a good job we're doing. And exactly. And that's the whole point of the FBI and the other law enforcers and all that other stuff, is to keep people afraid and then point to nothing and call it a success.
Well, it's a good racket. And just think on the weird chance that a lion does sneak into Detroit and eat somebody, then they just sit back and be like, well, obviously we need more money.
Yeah.
And they get a win either way.
But the one thing that you don't have to worry about Lions doing in Detroit is winning a Super Bowl. Thanks for listening tonight. For more Freedom Fiends, go to freedomfiends.com.
Worms.
Come to think of it, the Tigers don't win too much either.